96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Monday, the 28th of March, 2022, and it's time for a roll call. Who survived the winter blast of March? Look here, 2013, that's almost 14. No, wait, my math is horrible this morning. 9 years ago, that's almost a decade ago. Wow. Anyway, 2013, we did the Agribusiness Expo out on the Gladstone Road field in front of the complex, right? And we were there Saturday night. It was so cold that frost could be seen as people were breathing, exhaling, you know, and inhaling. It was just tremendously cold. But what I found particularly startling about this weekend's, not cold front, cold blast, right, is that the daytime, like Saturday daytime, it was just as hot in the day as it was cold in the night. And that strikes me as like desert. We talk about the weather in the desert areas, right? Where a clear sky is super hot in the day and super cold at night. Anyway, I just like to write CARICOM and tell them, no, thank you. We don't want that. I mean, either make it all cold or make it all hot. This half and half thing, I can't afford that. It's too much. Anyway. For those who enjoy the cold, I would like to say you're welcome, and hopefully this is the last blast of cold we have for the year. That was just too cold. It was too cold. And then, you know, after watching the news last night, I could see why it was cold, trying to cool the earth down. It's too hot out there. It's too hot out there. I had this headline for the show today. Saw a commentary on continued shootings and killings throughout the week and this weekend, and somebody said it's March Madness, alluding to the collegiate basketball season that's also upon us. And I want to say that sometimes, I think the word is hyperbole, but sometimes we exaggerate to draw attention to something that is very serious, you know? And what came to mind is, you're right, it's March Madness. Murder is our national sport, and it's killing season. But we could see that the government is also taking this matter seriously. And this weekend, there was a crime conclave, an emergency meeting called to address the issue and devise strategy with some of the country's leading stakeholders. And that is a good thing. We have to draw attention to it. But you remember the words of Mother Teresa, another complicated figure in our modern history. She said, don't invite me to an anti-war rally. Invite me to a pro-peace demonstration. You know? Invite me to a pro-peace demonstration, not an anti-war rally. And so we're going to focus on this issue, but we're going to focus on the positive. We're going to focus on the strategies and the solutions. And this is important because I'm an advocate. I'm about anti-violence strategies. I believe that the most fundamental human right is that everyone has a right to a life free of violence. And so When the slap scene across the world happened last night, I thought about how we can talk about this without seemingly promoting violence, right? How do you have a balanced conversation addressing this without seemingly promoting violence? I think we could do it. And so the headline that I thought about after I saw the initial video, did some research, got some context, watched a clip that contained the entirety of the joke that led up to the engagement, I thought, Oscar night, what is it? Respectability politics, Oscar night, and the royal visit. And how all of these things are sort of linked. It's this little similarity, this little similarness in each situation. There's a place where they cannot be extricated, like removed from each other. I thought about the way that we critiqued people who dared to protest, who dared to air our dirty laundry, who dared to protest in the face of the visit of the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. And I thought, you know, what violence is telling people, don't be concerned or alarmed. You are an independent nation. These people have no real control over us. And then in the same breath, telling them, but what we really gonna need you to do is invisibilize yourself because, you know, we don't want to upset them or do anything that would shed a negative light on us in the face of their visit. See, that's violence. That's like I made a draw an allusion earlier in the month or last month to the fact that it was only, I think, in the end of February or the beginning of March that the U.S. federal government, the U.S. federal judicial system recognized formally lynching as a hate crime. And imagine what it must feel like to be of African descent in America, going through all you got to go through and witnessing all that you got to witness to find out that it took that much time to recognize lynching as a hate crime. See, violence operates in many ways. The type of violence we're most familiar with is like, you know, physical, aggressive, overt violence that you can see on the surface. There are all kinds of violence that we engage in all the time, every day, towards each other. And so for those of you who may have seen the comment that I made on my wall last night, and I will repeat it here, y'all respectability politics slap harder than Will Smith last night. I want to ask, is that the thing that made you so upset? Like, y'all really think that Will has ruined his career because of that slap? Oh, the horror. But a man by the name of Donald Trump could become president of the United States of America with sexual assault and rape charges. Well, they call them sexual assault. I'm not sure of the fine details, the legal wording. Cases against him. He said some heinous things like, I'm a guy, I will grab him by the genitals, right? And he became president of the United States of America. I didn't see anybody boycott the United States of America because of Trump. And next point I want to make before I quickly move on is this. This blackness that you wish to protect so much, this image of the collective blackness that you're so concerned that will tarnish. Well, let me tell you all something. It's Will who created that image. It ain't you. It ain't me. It ain't us. It's Will that created it. So when you critique him, put some spatial awareness and mindfulness in your mouth. Understand where you are located in this entire discussion. And ask yourself, what have I contributed to blackness that warrants this moral judgment? And then ask yourself, what have I contributed to in my own country? What are the spaces within which I perpetuate violence against other people, other black people? What are the spaces in which I make a safer environment for other people before I make such a heavy critique? Anyway, I just had to get that off my chest. I know it felt like a slap. So don't do me like you all did Will Smith last night. Y'all tried to cancel the whole man. Let's just start here. In comedy, you punch up, you don't punch down. And you certainly don't make the base of your joke somebody's health condition that they've been brave enough to talk about publicly. And you don't pretend like you weren't doing what you were actually doing when you do it in public on the Oscar stage. Sometimes we just ask black people to eat too much. It's like, yo, you want us to eat our feelings every single day. Thank you, producer. Let's go to a break. When we get back from the break, just quick break. Toby Smith is joining me. We're going to touch quickly on the status of the Paradise Island Lighthouse and Beach Club Company petition. We'll be right back. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
We believe in relationship banking. We take pride in getting to know our clients. You have access to knowledgeable, approachable ambassadors and financial coaches so that we can recommend the best product for you. At Fidelity, we care about you. From your financial health to your physical health, we can relate to you because we're just like you. Come and start your relationship banking experience with us today. Visit us online at fidelitygroup.com. Visit any of our branches in Nassau or Grand Bahama, or phone 356-7764 in Nassau, or 352-6676 for Freeport.
One thing there is no debate about is that PTC has the best rates. Now, the best rates just got better because you pay half the price of the other guys with your PTC home internet and mobile services combined. Switching to PTC is a no-brainer because I pay less with PTC and get super fast internet with speeds up to 600 megs. The other guys, their internet only go up to 105 megs.
Get all the internet you want at half the price when you bundle your home internet and mobile. Visit a PTC store to make the switch today. Conditions apply.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Erin Green. I got a quick little interview with Toby Smith, and then we're going to transition to a discussion with Mr. Miller from the Bahamas National Reparations Committee. And I want Toby to sit into that conversation as well, and I'm going to tell you all why in a second. Good morning, Mr. Smith. How are you?
Good morning, Ms. Green. I'm very well, thank you. And good morning, Bahamas and people listening throughout the world.
All right, so let's get straight to it. Tell the people, what is the issue at hand would we come to discuss today?
The issue at hand, the central issue, is that I am the proprietor of Paradise Island Lighthouse and Beach Club. It is to restore the Paradise Island Lighthouse free of charge to the Bahamian people. The landmark will remain the property of the Bahamian people. It's located on Crown land. The Crown land will remain property of the Bahamian people, and is also to develop a low-impact, sustainable tourism product, which would be the Beach Club for Bahamians and our guests to enjoy. And that's what's going to be producing the revenues in order to be able to restore our famous lighthouse. So the issue at hand is that I was issued a Crown land lease from the Minnis administration in 2020. And then they turned around and said just a few short weeks later that my lease ain't valid. And I think it's a very dangerous line for the government to be walking on and issuing leases to locals and international companies and then turning around and saying that lease ain't valid. Mm-hmm. So that's the central issue. And because of it, you've got the government in court. And Wednesday, the 30th of March, is going to be our day in court where this will hopefully be a win for Bahamians, the Bahamian people, not necessarily those that represent or supposed to be representing the Bahamian people, but a victory for Bahamian people.
All right. So what's the status of the court action?
The status of the court action is that we've gone already through the pretrial hearing. Everything has been done thus far, which leads us up to the actual hearing.
Okay.
And it's before the Supreme Court, and the government is going to have to make their case just as well as I'm going to have to make my case. But it has come down to a young Bahamian, me, who is having to fight government for 10 years now, or actually April 12th next month. That will make 10 years of me having to fight to get some land so that we can have a Bahamian product out there for Bahamians to be able to enjoy, such as beach access and access to our historical landmark structures, as in the lighthouse.
Absolutely. So what do you think is going to happen? Like, if you win the case, right?
When I win the case?
When you win the case, yes. You think the government is going to be ordered to give you back access to that land that was removed with the new lease and given to the cruise line? Or do you think they're going to do that standard government thing when they're going to say, we're going to give you access to a lot of land that is equal in value and equal in aesthetics to be used somewhere else? You think that's what they're going to do?
Well, the decision is now out of the hands of the government and in the hands of Justice Ian Winder, who I've got faith in is going to deliberate on the evidence that presented before him. So what I am hoping for is that it's going to be a win for Bahamians, that this is a landmark case mm-hmm. about Bahamian landmark. So government can choose to take steps, and the steps that they've taken so far is to fight me.
Yeah.
So, all right, I'm not going to use violence in that fight, as is in the headlines now. I'm going to use a very strong legal case against the oppression that they're trying to do against us regular Bahamians.
Now, listen, ReEarth launched a case, I think it started all the way back in maybe 2009. It's the Black Bears Key case. And they got a judgment from Justice Winder ordering that the facility be shut down and the land be returned to its original state.
Reparations.
Right, but they still waiting. In fact, the people who own the dolphins have written at least once to say, hey, we're aware of the judgment, but we've been waiting on our dolphins in the mail now for a hot minute. What's happening? How will you get enforcement on a decision by the court if they rule in your
when they rule in my favor? I am hoping that they rule in my favor, and it's all about applying pressure. If the government wants to continue fighting a Bahamian project, Blackbeards is a foreign-owned project, but if they want to fight a Bahamian and show the Bahamian people that our money is being spent on fighting a Bahamian, then be that so as it may. I mean, someone has to have a good moral compass and be able to practice what they preach when they say that Bahamians are first, but in their actions, they are demonstrating that Bahamians are not first. Then it's up to Bahamians to stand up and voice their opinion against that, I believe.
All right, I got a text here. Just curious, how did in just 10 years your guests get acres of crown land on Paradise Island when tens of thousands have waited longer and most have never even gotten a response?
Yeah, so to those that haven't even gotten a response, or even those that have gotten a generic response, such as we are looking into your matter, then you got to rise up too. I mean, I'm on the radio, I'm in the newspaper, I'm on the TV, I'm on Facebook, I got a website, I'm starting petition. I've started petitions. It's about agitation. So I can only say, hey, join in the fight, man. Today it's me, obviously, with what I'm going through. And yesterday it's others. Fight Absolutely. For what you believe in.
Another quick text. So Toby wants to say Bahamians because he wants something. I'm tired of people using Bahamians.
What do you mean? I'm a Bahamian. What's wrong with the Bahamian wanting something?
The text say he never spoke Bahamian before. Hypocrisy. Okay, so texter. There's a sentence in there. I'm not even going to read it because the next sentence is ridiculous. Can't you not hear this man on the radio? He don't sound like a Bahamian to you. This boy is Bahamian. Every time I meet him, he sounds like a Bahamian.
Yeah, it don't matter, man. If you're going to judge people on the way that they speak and qualify them that they're not Bahamian on the way that they speak because of the way that they sound, then that's on you, man. That's your problem. That ain't mine. I ain't got to justify nothing to you.
I got another text says the guest probably did the work and is following through. You can't wait, want something and sit back and wait. Another text quickly.
Amen.
Great show as usual. Oh, here we go. Great show as usual, Miss Green. Did I see the lady who was dressed like the Bahamian flag at the ball? No, you know I can't afford to even go stand outside that ball. To text for you, Toby, great show as usual. Tell your guests the government will give him the land, but they will give him the worst part of the land and the part where no one could swim.
Yeah, that's what they're trying to swing me on. That's somebody that's high up in the Bahamas Investment Authority that I'm not going to name, but I should, yeah, who's had a gripe and is trying to upset the apple cart.
I got you. Now, Toby, yeah. Just before we go, I tell you I had a couple hard questions for you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I can tell you to your face on the radio,
yeah.
After you came on before, I made some critique and I said, look here, I see the treehouse and I could imagine how the people say, yeah, this guy is not ready to compete with Royal Caribbean. So why not put the land with the best capacity to generate money to put in Bahamian's hands, the hands of the people?
Let me just qualify one thing. I've gone over there and built a treehouse. Yes. The reason for that is that my workforce, because of COVID, have had significantly reduced hours, and I've been paying them all throughout COVID and getting monthly bonuses to make sure that they can provide for themselves and for their families. So if anybody has a problem with that, then that's on them. The fact that we took the chance and or the time to go out there and build a treehouse out of repurposing wood was a team building exercise where me and my crew can go out there in a beautiful scene and we built a treehouse. It was just something that we did as a hobby for pleasure. That's not the finished look. That's not the architectural design. The architectural design that we're going for is strictly Bahamian, not pave paradise and put in a parking lot,
mm-hmm.
not some, you know, desecrate the whole land, what's done in Cocoa Key. No, it's to keep it strictly Bahamian.
All right. I got a text here and it says, does the fact that he is a white Bahamian have anything to do with him getting all that crown land on Paradise Island? Just curious. Toby, I'm going to answer this one. Their text, here's what we're going to do. Go find the land registry books for Mayor Guana and Grand Bahama. Go find them. I believe they're somewhere near the Oban file.
Huh.
Go find the missing pages, right? And then tell me who you think take the line. Tell me who you think take the line.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Read in between the lines and see what's going down in those places and see who's behind it. And then you'll understand what's going on and why people are actually intimidated not to talk about
right.
it.
Right. And so I had an encounter with someone this morning that said, oh, y'all people, you just like to pull the race card. And I explained to them, I don't think you understand how the race card works. The race card is used to obfuscate. Right? To confuse an issue.
Yeah.
That's
yeah, throw people off. So right. I'll own that I'm white.
Yeah.
Right? I'll own that I have experienced white privilege. Yeah. Let's not deny it. Let's lay the cards on the table, right? My parents busted my butt and given me what they could afford as far as a good education.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I never went hungry.
Yeah.
Thankfully, they raised me with good morals. And some of those morals are, for instance, be honest, don't lie. A promise is a promise. And stick up for what you believe
in. And the country has been driven by family island determination, right? Not like, we see, we get a monarchy, we get a monarchy, we get the oligarchy, which is the political class and the merchant class and a couple other little classes put together, right?
Right.
But it's family island determination that's driven this country, and that's across the color spectrum. Family island is across the color spectrum. So the things that we think are privileged sometimes and nested in whiteness are nested in something that we confuse with whiteness, right? Let me just throw that out there.
Sure.
But Toby, last thing, and then we gotta go like throw you out of the room, but we gotta transition to our second conversation.
Yeah.
Is this the PLP government gave you a promise while? Well, the PLP gave you a promise while they were in opposition, did they?
Brave Davis gave me his word
that he would,
that he was going to cancel the lease for RCL,
yeah,
and that my lease would be honored.
Okay. You didn't bet any money on that, right?
I asked for it in writing, and it was reinforced with Toby, my word is my bond.
I got you.
Just the same way that I asked Minnis for a comfort letter when I heard that he was getting ready to double deal the Crown Land with Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines.
Absolutely.
I asked him for a comfort letter to say, hey, I understand something stink going on here. I want a reassurance, which is in the form of a comfort letter.
So he none of them would give you a LOI. Nobody, you couldn't even get a letter of intent.
I have a memorandum of understanding. I have a whole Crown Land lease.
Right. You do.
Yeah.
You do.
And while in opposition, Brave Davis, the Prime Minister now, and Glenys Hannah-Martin, and the press secretary of the Prime Minister now, Clint Watson, have all stood up, and they have said that they're going to cancel the RCL lease, that they stand up for Bahamians, that they stand up for me. And I'm just waiting on that to materialize. However, in the meantime, I've got to push on my court case.
I got you. I got a text that says, Aaron, don't get me wrong with what I texted before. I can support Toby. I just don't like people using Bahamians when they're ready for their personal advantage.
It ain't buddy, about using Bahamians. I am a Bahamian.
Exactly.
Right? So it ain't about using people. So I say this. I don't care if you pink, purple, black, white, whatever your color. That's not the issue here, right? Just look at a Bahamian for a Bahamian. It don't matter what color they are. So I'm lost.
Right. And so now's a good time to sort of make the transition to the second segment, which is why I have these sort of two guests here to this morning, right? My second guest, Mr. Miller, we're going to talk about the Bahamas National Reparations Committee's statement in response to the visit by the royal family to the Bahamas that also coincided with the anniversary of the International Day of Remembrance for Slavery and the Transatlantic Slave Trade. And so in the context of the discussion about reparations, when you look at the 10-point plan from the Constitution, CARICOM Reparations Committee, on it, number 3 is Indigenous Peoples Development Program, right? And I want to say for a moment that at the academic level, Indigenous doesn't just mean those who sprung up here naturally, right? In the context of the Caribbean, it could be fair to say that the Africans that were brought here against their will, and the Europeans that came and fled for religious persecution, right, but have been here for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, and in many instances before the enslaved Africans were brought here, those people, the European descent and African people, could be considered indigenous, right? And so the campaign that Toby Smith has launched for me, I think, coincides with, sits next to, if not a part of, the reparations discussion we're having about the use of the land. And in this particular instance, right, the challenge of a Bahamian using the land by, you know, going to allow a massive, major, multinational corporation to come in and have access to that same land. And so when my texters talk about privilege and white privilege, I want to show you why I'm still sitting these two conversations together. Because Toby is indigenous to the Bahamas in the same way that I am indigenous to the Bahamas. Our ancestors both came here a very long time ago, and we have been here historically so long that we are from this place. And this place is more of who we are than Europe or Africa is. And I'm going to say that that's open to critique, but I want to throw that out there. And so that's why I'm going to have Toby sit in with this conversation and join in if he feels he wants to, or if he's willing to answer anything that I ask. So, producer, my guest is in the Zoom room. Good morning, Mr. Miller. How are you?
Good morning, Aaron. How are you doing?
I am good. Good, thank you.
Also.
My apologies for not having a two-hour show today in particular, because this is a full topic. Welcome to the Bahamas National Reparations Committee. Can you just tell us what your position is with the committee?
My position recently was a student advocate of sorts.
Okay.
While I was a member, while I was a student at UB,
mm-hmm.
and I've just transitioned into still being a member of the organization. since graduation.
Awesome, awesome. So listen, the statement by the National Reparations Committee is a very strong statement, and it's not just been well received, but it's been celebrated around the world. But let me ask you this, why y'all didn't organize a physical protest or demonstration for the visit?
Well, our group is really, really small.
Uh-huh.
And I think our size really was what hindered a protest. And
okay.
A determination was made to see which one would be more effective.
Okay. I got you.
And I think it was a strategic decision than anything else.
Absolutely. And
both, I think, will have a lasting impact because, you know, good or bad, indifferent, whatever you put in the internet, it stays there permanently for all to see. And this letter will do that.
Absolutely. I was going to say, is a demonstration just as good as a protest? And is the letter, like a demonstration, the letter protest in form of a demonstration?
Yes. And it goes back to the old adage, pen is more mighty than the sword, that type of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I think both can equally be as effective, depending on the resources you're working with, and let's say the cause that you're working with. And I think this letter had the impact that we wanted it to have. And I don't think it took away from what impact a demonstration could have had, but I think this letter did what we wanted.
Absolutely. But
I think it could be equally as effective given the context.
Absolutely. So the first point on the CRC, CARICOM Reparations Committee's 10-point plan is for the governments of Europe to offer a full and formal apology for their crimes against humanity. I'll add, one, the acknowledgement that the systems that created and perpetuated white supremacy and chattel slavery still exist today, and two, committing to changing those systems. I would even say that the system of land use assessment that we were talking about in the first segment, where it appears as if a larger corporation, particularly a mega resort, will always win over a local investor, is an example of those same systems still existing today. Do you think European royalty leaders and governments will ever apologize for the crimes against humanity of native genocide, the transatlantic slave trade, and a racialized system of chattel slavery?
It remains to be seen. I think as we move, as time goes, they're inching closer and closer to it, but ever so resistant. The language over the years has gotten softer and is leading towards an apology, but they are, and if you notice all the speeches that Gordon Brown, the Prince William, and his father would give, they're very well crafted in the PR at its focus.
Right.
And I see how the language is changing because he acknowledged that slavery was really bad, but he didn't say sorry. So we consistently see the language changing. We don't know if and when a full formal apology will come.
Mm-hmm.
We're expecting one, demanding one, because once you apologize for doing something and you have not acknowledged the wrong, then the question now comes to say, so what are you willing to do about this now, now that you accept you've done some harm? So we're still expecting it, and we see the language changing, but it's not enough.
All right, so in 2015, David Cameron, the British Prime Minister at the time, ruled out making reparations for Britain's role in the historic slave trade and urged Caribbean countries to, quote, unquote, move on. On a trip to, I think, to Jamaica, right after visiting the Jewish Holocaust Memorial event. He went on to tell the Jamaican people, look here, what we could do is we could build y'all a prison. Now, I agree the engagement, the language has softened, has changed since 2015, But how has it looked? How has engagement with European governments looked over the last 7 years?
I do not think the engagement has changed much.
Okay.
They're still trying to distance themselves from anything insofar as any kind of reparations. Mm-hmm. However, we've seen where public sentiments have begun to change and bring it back to the pandemic and the Black Lives Matter protest that moved all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I bring that to a forefront to say this. People push governments to do things that they don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever public sentiment begins to change, that's when governments act, when they're forced to act, especially on issues that might seem controversial at one point. And there are a number of examples that I could point to. So we see in the public sphere where the issue of reparations is now beginning to come up, and governments are now forced to acknowledge it. Because this is not the prime ministers and princes and duchesses used to come to the region routinely, but they weren't greeted with these demands in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're being forced to address it. So I think public sentiment, if anything, is what will push them towards doing things that they do not want to do, i.e. an apology and, dare I say, possibility of reparations.
Absolutely. Can we look at the British engagement in the Windrush issue and their sort of changing of policy and attitude at the very sort of close to the end there? Do we see that as an indicator of shifting attitudes around reparations and engagement of those of us that still feel, I'll say acknowledge, but feel like we're not a part of the whole? Things have not changed. We're not really recognized as equal, even in the countries that we have helped to make great.
And you know what was amazing about the Windrush thing? Is that there was an attempted cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was tried to brush under the rug while everything was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, if I'm not wrong, Theresa May is, I think, a high-ranking government official had to resign over the handling of that issue.
Mm-hmm.
But what caused a reversal? Public outcry.
Yes.
It was when the news broke and the news agency that probably chose deliberately, intentionally to ignore it along with the government had no choice but to begin giving it coverage.
Okay.
And days upon days of advocacy, people writing letters, it dominating the news, and the British government was forced to reverse its position on a matter that they knowingly did what they did. It wasn't a mistake. It was intentionally done, if you were following it. So I will always talk about public outcry, advocacy, and pushing leaders to do what they do not want to do.
Absolutely. So listen, I'm going to read through the 10 items on the point on the committee's plan, right? And I've got Mr. Smith in studio with me. Tell me, A, which of the points are the regional and local committees prepared to move on or engage, whether they get a formal apology or not? And of these issues here, which of the points coincide with the issue that Toby Smith and the Lighthouse and the Paradise Island Lighthouse and Beach Club petition addresses? Still there, Mr. Miller?
Yes.
Sorry.
You said you were about to read.
Oh, yeah, my bad. Sorry. Number one is full formal apology. Number two is repatriation. Number three is Indigenous Peoples Development Program. Number four is cultural institutions. Number five is public health crisis. Number six is illiteracy eradication. Number seven is African Knowledge Program. Number eight is psychological rehabilitation. Number nine is technology transfer. And number 10 is debt cancellation. And I couldn't read for each one, but if you go online and search CARICOM 10-point reparations plan, that info will pop up for you.
Now, if you have, from my opinion,
mm-hmm.
the language you use to describe indigenous in your monologue, so to speak, is a little bit different from how CARICOM characterized it.
I know.
I bring that up to say this. Mm-hmm. What you did, you made it a more inclusive term. And why that is important is because in the way CARICOM craft indigenous, a number of the islands would not have any indigenous people on them.
Mm-hmm.
If we're using the strict interpretation of the indigenous, because the quote-unquote indigenous people have all died. However, your articulation of indigenous brings in African people and people of European descent that have made these islands their own for several hundred years, and by all purposes should be considered indigenous. So Indigenous People's Development Program, in my opinion, using your articulation, which I have no problem with, is where Toby's issue with the government, I think, would come in if I have to give an answer.
Absolutely.
Because offering, quote, indigenous people the opportunity for self-determination, the ability to earn a honest living in their land, is all about reparations.
Yeah.
And the idea of reparations only being a check is a fallacy. Some of what we're asking for is the opportunity to be our best selves, for self-actualization. Give me the land so I can develop it, so I can employ so and so. So now I can be the best version of myself. And that is an example that is similar to the gentleman that is having his case with the government.
Absolutely. Looking at the list, number four, cultural institutions, talks about European nations have invested in the development of community institutions such as museums and research centers in order to prepare their citizens for an understanding of these crimes against humanity. These facilities serve to reinforce within the consciousness of their citizens an understanding of their role in history as rulers and change agents. There are no such institutions in the Caribbean where the crimes against humanity were committed. And so I would also point to number four, because I think that the work of preserving, protecting, documenting, and sharing the history of the lighthouses and their function in our country, in our experiences, both as European descent people coming here and African descent people coming here, should be told by Bahamians. That job should be that should be a national duty. And Bahamians should be responsible for that. And we should not leave that valuable work in the hands of foreigners, especially not foreigners with a primarily, right? Because the... go on.
I would like to add to that, because I have someone who is really, really passionate about that.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing back stolen artifacts is key to that.
Right, absolutely.
There are a number of artifacts around the world taken, and they're in museums in Europe, some cases America, but primarily Europe. These artifacts should be brought back to the indigenous countries so that the people there could have an appreciation for it, and they could benefit from it financially also. That is a key aspect of the cultural aspect of which you spoke.
Yeah, Toby.
Good morning, Mr. Miller. This is Toby here. I've sat quietly and you've raised a number of points, and I can see that this is somewhat tied to the lighthouse and what Bahamian rights are being affected here and whatnot. But I don't want to take away what your message is with the reparations. So there's actually a group of Bahamians that went to Ghana in the last few days.
Right, last week.
Right.
Sankofa Flamingo Foundation pilgrimage to Pokisu and to the Princess Town, which is the home of Giankau. I hope I say that correctly, but the figure that we call John Canoe, they went to
find the origins.
Yes.
So as far as the cultural institutions are concerned, yes, you could tie it onto other things in the Bahamas, but looking what our roots are and defining what the actual truth is and where our culture comes from, rather than perhaps being misguided by a different narrative of people that don't really know, I think is really important. And top of the list here is the formal apology. I mean, how do you begin a discussion? How do you begin dialogue without the most simplistic form that a human can express to another to say sorry for what we've done? Sorry, just actually recognizing that, how that rings in people's hearts that have been wronged, to say that this person actually doesn't even have to be in the realm of empathy, but acknowledges, yes, what I did was wrong. And it takes a big person to admit that they're wrong. Mm-hmm. But why the hesitation? why try and confuse people, segregate people, put one person against another person for their own? How about just, yes, acknowledging it? What we did was wrong. What was done was wrong.
Well, it's because they're very concerned about setting a legal precedent from which they can never step back.
Well, so be it. So, yeah, I understand. Yeah. I understand the whys, right? But the importance of something that could just be at this stage an apology to recognize, listen, that was wrong. And we're not going to try to blame it on somebody else and saying, oh, it was this person at court. No, just own it and fess up to it. And people in their hearts and their minds, they can release some of that anger.
Mm-hmm.
And that oppression, mm-hmm. by somebody else acknowledging, hey, yes, that was wrong and we're sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I say and acknowledge that we still benefited from it. Now, Mr. Miller, Mr. Smith, I have 1,075 texts to read here, so here we go. Hi, Toby, you should know when the PLP says Bahamian first and when the FNM says it's the people's time, both mean a certain group. Now, in this instance, I'm going to say quickly because I got to get back through the text. I think that this is a standard Bahamian government formula that was applied to this case. How much money can we pull the government? How much money can be extracted from this process for the government and with a minimal amount of work put in? And right, for the government side?
Yep.
And how many people can this project feed? Bahamians, can this project feed with minimal input from the government? And I think that's the formula that they apply to everything. And they say, man, Royal Caribbean got money and they could hire Bahamians and the government could just make the taxes and Bahamians could just get paid and we don't worry about anything else. I think that's the formula that's been applied here. Another text, Toby will get plenty pushback now. Why didn't he take a chance with the New Day crew politics in the 242? Watch the crabs now. I don't know if you remember me saying on day two of the PL administration that they made a mistake on day one. I just hope you all remember me saying that. Okay. Texter said, glad you've admitted your white privilege. I've made my point. Texter, I don't think you made a point. I mean, you made your point, but I don't think it was really a necessary point. Great show as usual. Getting too sorry. Toby is a Bahamian. Wait till you hear him cuss when they give him the land he can't use. Man, there anybody listening to the show know what Bahamian is? No, Toby is a Bahamian, man. And a Bahamian who live here, Bahamian. Now, the text, color maybe, so be fair, or Toby, or nobody gets it. In fact, high time majority, not minority people rule. Enough is enough. Colonial masters, oligarchs, black lives, and all our lives matter and need fair advantage also. Listen, you're right, but let's see the sophisticated transition of power. Now this thing we call race, which is mutable, it changes over time, geography, culture, right? That this thing is, the oligarchy is now the political class and the merchant class. And it appears as if we're getting sort of like Guyana, where we have a foreign Bahamian class that has a degree of control over local politics more than the collection of local voters. Another text, I don't see the royals or Britain as a hindrance to our country. I put that hindrance squarely on our governance. Example, it's not the Queen or the British Empire holding back on dispersing land and opportunities for us Bahamians. We are in full control of our sovereign governance.
It's Bahamians that are oppressing Bahamians. And all you got to do is bring in a foreigner that's throwing money around town, and those same Bahamians that are oppressing Bahamians are singing for the choir.
Listen, I bet you the song that we couldn't find the note anyway. Wherever the Grand Bahama and Meg Warner pages are, that's where all the treasures of the Bahamas lie. Morning, Aaron. Excellent show. Reparations Committee in the Bahamas is weak. Why didn't they stand with the Rastas in protests? They can keep their apology and make action so that Bahamians could live abundantly like God intended for us. Now, Mr. Miller, I hope you will allow me to respond to that text. Is that okay?
Please do. Please do.
First of all, let me show you all something. If you know anything about revolution and war, you know, first of all, in your toolkit, well, you must have audacity. You also have to have imagination. You have to have discipline. You have to have preparation. I can stop right there. You got to have discipline, preparation, imagination. Not every protest, you don't know what is a protest sometimes. Not everything is done on the surface. And I am the anti-imperialist, anti-capitalist advocate in the Bahamas telling you, we're not ready for that revolution yet. Y'all could barely feed yourselves. You can't even stop at the stop sign in the road. You cannot park your car on the sidewalk. You can't not park your car running next to the breakfast booth, making your breakfast like everybody wants smoked breakfast. I am the anti-imperialist advocate telling you, you ain't ready for that yet. You got this boy calling himself a political advocate in the bush filming poor Haitian migrants, embarrassing him for his own political and social credit. We are not ready. So stop beating people up for something you can't even figure out how to name yet. Okay, then.
I will say one thing to that, Aaron.
Yes, sir.
One thing
very quickly.
I don't think no one is ever ready for a revolution.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It comes up on you, mm-hmm. and it's either you get with the tide or the tide leaves you behind.
I got
that, you. That's one thing I like to add.
And if I can, Miss Green, Mr. Miller, don't mind the haters out there, man. You're going to get people throwing rock, conch shell, Guinness bottle, whatever at you, man, from the sidelines, but they ain't the ones in the trenches, and they ain't the ones fighting to try bring the message through. So as soon as you go out there and protest, like at a Rastas protest and whatnot, and how can protest? Oh, she is inappropriate. She shouldn't be out there. Listen, if you ain't going to hear me now, you can hear me
right.
at some point.
Boy, look
here. If you want to keep ignoring me, then you can still keep getting heard out there.
Toby, I got to go. Listen, you know what Exuma the Obey Man say? Well, it's what the Reparations Committee reminded us. They must pay me for my blood in the water. Pay me for my son and my daughter. Pay me for my brothers and my sisters. Pay me for all of my dead. Pay me for the blood that you shed. Pay me what you owe me. Listen, stay tuned. Jay and Kenny is up next on Guardian Radio AM. And later today, after one, after Chivago, you got Talking Heads with Naughty. Stay tuned all day to your station for fresh news, smart talk. Have a good one, Bahamas.
Thank you.
Baby, 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 baby.